Hello, everybody. This is Clint Locklear with Rant of a Free Trapper. I hope Santa Claus was good to everybody. I have to admit, Santa Claus was good to me. On my desk, I'm looking at I don't know the numbers of these things, but I'm calling it a baby Glock 10mm. So Santa Claus is real nice to me, and I've already got the Trichcon sights on it. And when I picked it up, it was kind of one of those things where the guy looks at me and he goes, you ever shot a 10 mil before? And I'm like, yes, sir, I've got the bigger version. He goes, you might want to start with more factory loads before you go to the full loads on this. That's a handful. Because it is tremendously smaller than my other Glock with the 10 millimeter. So Santa Claus is good to me. Hopefully Santa Claus was good to you. And we're going to talk about America's 1,000-year war. Before we do that, though, guys, I want to thank our sponsor, which is Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. They have pretty much anything you'd want. Plus, they, of course, have trap tags. And, you know, Funky's been making those for decades. And Alan, which is the owner of that now and also of Hilltop, he's a sponsor for The Rant. And which means he pays the bills so you can listen. So I would just recommend that if you're going to buy some products, give him a shot. He's on Amazon, he's on Bonanza, Walmart, Hilltop Outdoors, FunkyTrapTagsAndSupplies.com, all of that, and just good people. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about this tomorrow, but I want to go ahead and bring this up, and I've got a YouTube video on it that just letting everybody know. Alan came down last week, and he took back all of my lures and baits and videos and books with him to Iowa, and he even sent me a little picture where it's all nice and neat and better than ever looked in my shop. Alan is going to be my shipment fulfillment center for me. He is the distributor on all my outdoor stuff. So if you're, you know, locally, you wanted to buy some of that, say Tactical Nuke or Sexed Up Buck or something like that, that would come through Alan at Hilltop Outdoors because he's a distributor of that. But as far as the trapping lures and stuff, I ship the stuff to him. The orders still come in on my store. He has nothing to do with that. I pay him per box that he ships out. He's very good at that. Very organized and mechanized and all that type of stuff. So I just want to let you know that. I'm going to say that a few more times as we go through some of these shows, just so you know what's going on, because I know what the rumors are going to be. He's making it, he's selling it, I sold out, I've turned into Papa Smurf, you know, I don't know. There'll be some type of crazy rumor out there. The only difference is he physically puts it in the box now. And that's what I want to talk about tomorrow, well, on the actual show a little bit more, is why that is. And it's I think it's been a move that I should have did a long time ago. But America's 1,000-year war. Is that what we're trying to do? I mean, are we trying to break the evolutionary longest-term war known to man? Is that what we're trying to do in America? It almost seems that way. And I want to preference that with some stuff that I saw when I was younger. When I was in high school and I played semi-pro ball, and even in the military, I went to some very hardcore gyms, weightlifting gyms. I used to love to move a lot of weight. It was just, to me, it was almost like a rush. It was, you felt good. And, you know, I do a little bit of lifting today, not very much, but, I mean, just really, really enjoyed it. But when I was there, I kept seeing something, no matter where the gyms were at, I kept seeing this kind of pattern come up, and it never made any sense to me. And the sense is there an end game in what guys are doing? Is there an end game? Because it's pretty important, because it's going to have a lot to do with, I think, to influence the decision that person or organization does, if they understand there's an end game or there's not an end game. See, like me lifting weights now, I'm getting older. It's easier for me to get weaker. I know from all this other crazy studying I've done that it's a clear corresponding pattern within humans that the more muscle mass someone has as they get older, the healthier they are. There's a lot of reasons for that. Nothing as simple as it seems. And we're not going to go into that. But for me, the reason I lift weights is just to try to maintain strength and some muscle mass as far as just health. It's a health thing. It's not to get big. It's not to get super strong. I'm not doing things like I used to do with deadlifts. I'm doing Romanian deadlifts now, which you can't lift as much, but it's a lot harder on you, and you pull a lot more muscles in, but you just can't pull as much weight that way. I'm totally fine with that. I'm not trying to break bench press records or have 29-inch guns or any. It's for health. See, that's kind of my end game. Over the next, 10, 20 years or whatever, if I can kind of keep that up, I think it's going to allow me to have a better life as I get old. That's the end game. What I saw in the gyms does not meet that pattern. Now, there's a lot of guys that go in the gym and it's just for health reasons. It's to lose a little bit of weight. It's there was two older brothers. They're a lot younger than I am now, but they seemed old to me at the time. They were probably 38, 40 years old. And they went to the gym every day and they worked like dogs. And I got to know them pretty well. And I was only like 19 at the time. And they actually had a construction business. But they went to the gym and for an hour and a half, they tried to kill themselves. And once I got to know them, I found out why. If they worked that hard in the gym, they could drink more beer. That was their end game, to drink more beer and not get fat. And it seemed to be working. And that was their end game. They understood what that was. And then you have people that the doctor sends them in there, to try to get different things. But there's always a group of guys in a gym that have no intentions of being a competitive bodybuilder, no intentions of being a competitive power lifter, or I guess today you could say CrossFit or something like that. It was just they were gym rats, and there was a herd of them always at a gym. They are normally the loudest, they dress the craziest, they're always flexing here and there. They like the attention and stuff like that. But what I noticed from a core group of these guys and everyone, even as younger, I used to just wonder, why are you doing this? Now, see, when I used to go weightlifting, like my big drug for that was when you got done, you went and drank about almost a half a gallon of milk. Had a lot of protein, stuff like that. I wouldn't do that now, but at the time I thought that's what I needed to do. I never took steroids, never took growth hormones, I never took insulin, I never took, believe it or not, they used to take something like out of an orangutan's testicles that you're supposed to blow you up, and people were taking that. There's all kinds of these drugs, hardcore drugs, that can or may not have consequences that are very, very serious. Now, I know a lot of guys, when they see a professional bodybuilder, they all go, well, he's on steroids. Well, no shit, he's on steroids. But that's his end game, is to be the biggest human being possible. And they're going to do whatever they need to do if they're a competitive bodybuilder to try to get that extra bit of weight, cut that extra bit of fat, and be able to recuperate from one workout from the next, which is actually what steroids do. It doesn't make you big, it allows you to recuperate. But this core group of guys that had a regular day job, they never had any intentions of competing, because it's to get down to 3% body fat, you about kill yourself, literally about kill yourself. And that's a discipline a lot of people don't want to have. And it's something that money-wise, as far as supplements, and you got to have a job, and you got to do all these crazy hours and stuff like that. No intentions of being a competitive, professional, paid bodybuilder. But they treated everything like it was competitive, as far as taking the human growth hormones, taking hormones that you would give a cow, taking steroids, taking dinotabs, taking all these different things, and they were big. I mean, from a normal point of view, these dudes were walking monsters. And if you know anything about those type drugs, once you get off of it in 5 or 6 months, you're going to lose probably half of everything that you had. But to these guys, whatever the repercussions for taking these amount of drugs at the dosages they were taking them, in the diets that they were having, for not to be a competitive bodybuilder made no sense to me whatsoever. Because what's the end game there? You're 70 years old, still being the gym rat, still trying to pump steroids to stay a certain size, for what reason? You know, you want to look good? Okay, I get it. But what is the end game for someone that's not going to be competitive to take stuff like that and risk a lot of, because I guarantee you most of these are not doing it scientifically with a doctor the way professional bodybuilders and other ball players, yes, most ball players take steroids, that they, you know, it's very well managed. And these guys are just, it seemed like whatever they get their hands on, and they would do all this crazy stuff, but there was no end game. Very dangerous, no end game. Now, an Olympic athlete, they really hurt their bodies to become an Olympic athlete. See, there's a goal. They want to win a gold for their country. When you talk to people that go to that level, it's not the health. There's no really top professional athlete that it's healthy by any stretch of the imagination. Not in health terms, but these gym rats were treating it like that with no end game in mind. So what I noticed is that they had a tendency for a couple of years to be really big and strong, and then they would kind of, you know, like only show up once a week, and then see them again, they lost a lot of their muscle, and you can tell they had a lot of their identity tied up into it. But it was just like floating on a whim throughout whatever they thought this reasoning was, that they would take all these drugs and lift all these weights. No end game. Olympic athlete has an end game. A professional bodybuilder that has the genetics has an end game. He wants to be a professional bodybuilder. That's the end game. A power lifter, you know, they're trying to scrape out every ounce that they can from whatever they're doing. There's an end game. But the gym rats that I remember, almost just as big as some of the professional bodybuilders, but they were just doing it because, and they kind of just, it's like they just floated through life like that. Now, this is what that's a long example to get to this one point. What is the end game for America in the Middle East? Because right now, I think we're like the gym rats. We're taking the drugs, we're spending the time, we're spending the money, just so we can slap each other on the back, I guess, about what we're doing. I don't know. And the reason this came to my mind is Trump has decided, which he ran on, by the way, but he's decided to pull out most of the troops from Syria and I think Iraq and or Afghanistan. And the Republicans and the Democrats, for that matter, are going epileptic. We've been in that war, guys, for 19 years. As far as I know, the only thing that might have lasted that long might have been the full scale of the Crusades. Kind of in the same place. 19 years. We've now got troops in parts of Africa. Nobody really knows why. at least no one's saying anything. We got special forces doing that stuff in Africa. But in the Middle East, how long before we decide we need to have an end game? Because I don't think we know what that is. I think for a lot of people that make arms and supply the military and contractors and lobbyists, their end game is to keep the money coming in. Now that may sound bad, but I don't know how else to say that. There's a tremendous amount of profit in for a country to go to war. Tremendous amount of profit for companies, because you get contracts and they're government contracts, and it's not like they're really set up to, you know, find the best deals. It's find the buddies that's done something else for me type things. But you have all these different businesses, and it's a whole industry. It's an industry of military, and it's huge. I mean, all that money that goes in the budget, which is what the biggest thing in our budget, goes somewhere, and it ain't to the salary of the soldiers, I'd tell you that. It's flowing everywhere. So what's the end game? Now, the people that profit from it, it's the profit. The Americans that aren't in the war industry that Truman warned us about, what is the end game in the Middle East? I don't think we have one. And when I hear people that are supposedly experts in the Middle East talk about it, well, if we leave, there's going to be a vacuum. And if we leave, they're going to resurrect like they did after we left last time. And it's going to be bigger than ever. And, you know, they go into apocalyptic type things that are going to be going on. And it's always against Americans' interest. Americans' interest are the war industry interest. Yeah, there are people over there who want to kill us. Sure. You can probably cut in front of somebody today and that dude wants to kill you too, but hopefully y'all two don't go to war. They're a long way away. It's not like they're going to get on ships and come over here and attack. They do terrorist stuff. Yes, it's bad. Unfortunately, that's the world we live in today. But really, why do we have such a force in the Middle East? And it's not like I can pull some type of great epiphany about why that is. I'm besides the money, I'm lost. I'm absolutely lost on why we're over there. How? The better question is, what is the end game of that? See, World War II had an end game. You kill the Germans, you kill the Japs, and you kill the Italians. You go home. Pretty much different players, same theme in World War I, same theme in Korea. And we started getting squirrely with this in the Vietnam era. And we've been going down this route where It's kind of like a government agency. If you get to start a war somewhere, people get to live off of that for the rest of their career. But besides that, what is the end goal in the Middle East? Because I'm here to tell you, and if you've never been to the Middle East, I'm talking sure enough been to the Middle East for more than just like, you know, getting off an airplane at an airport. You see the lunacy of us trying to hold together the Middle East. You can go all the way through the Bible. The Bible tells you how to deal with the different people in the Middle East, which we'll get to in a second. The Bible's very clear about that. Just for the nature of the area and the culture of that area. Now, I don't know how many shows ago it was. Tim said a phrase to me that stuck, and I've talked to him about this. When you always hear, we stole Mexico from the Mexicans. He goes, no, we didn't steal it, we conquered it. Which was what everybody did at that time frame. In history, we were no better, no worse than every other human being on the earth. Because I hate to let the Mexicans know, but the reason that they're Mexicans is not because they're from Mexico. It's because of the Spanish that came over and took them over. So we took it over from somebody else that took it over from the smaller tribes. We conquered it. But when you conquer, this is where I think we're in a place in our evolution that they screwed up. War is uncivilized. It's not something that can be regulated with just rules and SOPs and the government says we're going to do this. When people are trying to kill each other and people are trying to stay alive, there's nothing civilized about sending a 308 round through somebody's sternum. There's nothing civilized of running out of an ammo and picking up a E-tool, which is one of those little shovels, and beating people to death with it. There's nothing civilized or glorious about that. Nothing. There's nothing glorious or civilized about hellfire missiles coming out of a drone. Just as it's not civilized for all the EIDs that the insurgents leave over in the Middle East. There's nothing civilized about war. Now, I can say this probably and get away with it, and I'm sure someone's still going to get mad. The military is not civilized. That is like an ancient culture that lives within the civilization of a civilized nation of America. Because a soldier can't be a soldier if he's civilized. Because there's no way to do that in combat. And if you train him to be civilized, you're not training a soldier. See, what Tim also said in that is you have civilized and uncivilized. And if the civilized don't recognize the civilized always pretty much kill and eat the civilized. And that's absolutely true. That's why if something ever happens in your life that's bad, the last person you want around you is someone that's just been totally domesticated and civilized. You want someone that can go and see red at a half a nanosecond and go into pit bull, tear somebody's throat out, and leave brains and hair on the wall. That's what you want in that type of thing. But that's also really scary to civilized people, because how could someone do that? Me being from the military, when I always hear people talk about how emotionally distraught it is that if someone breaks in your house and you shoot them, that you took someone else's life. I hear stuff like that. Yeah, I know you have too. We've all heard these things. See, I'm not very civilized, guys. I'll go eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and go to sleep after I get done talking with the police. When someone breaks in your house, it's your job as a freaking man to protect. And if someone is trying to hurt something of yours, you protect it. And if it goes all the way to the final edge of violence, one of you's going to win and one of you's going to lose. But one of you chose to start it and one just happened to be there and someone was trying to make him a victim. See, in the military, the way that we're trained, and I'm pretty sure all branches are the same, at least the Army and the Marines are. When you have a weapon and you're engaging, you have a target. It's a target. It's not a person with a family, with kids, just trying to steal your TV so they can go get their kids some Christmas gifts or whatever the BS story is going to be. It's a target. See, the uncivilized, when it's time to be a man and protect, the uncivilized that's been trained in the military can go to target mode instantly. We have already given ourselves permission years and years and years ago that as soon as the threat is detected and it's serious, it's completely justified and okay to go to the ultimate outreaches of violence. That's not the way civilized people think. So if someone broke into my house and was going to hurt my wife, am I going to feel sorry for them when I put 10 millimeter rounds through them? Nope. I'm going to go out and check the yard to make sure they don't have a buddy. I'm not going to feel sorry for them. Target down. Next target. That's it. Because it's my job as a man to protect. So, you know, men's jobs are pretty simple. If you don't know what it is, let me tell you what a man is. You protect. You gather resources and you build shit. That's what a man does. That's what a man is good at. That's the role of a man inside of a family unit. That's it. It's pretty simple. But protect always comes first, and it always has all through our history of being human beings. Same as a male lion is. What do you think it's got all them scars from? It ain't from hunting. It's from protecting the lionesses and the cubs. That's what his job is. Because he does that, the lioness let him eat first. Because without him, they'd all be dead. So there's no way to have a conflict that's civilized. Because when you get to that point of war, guys, this idea of talking and having an open dialogue and stuff like that sounds really good for the civilized, but to the uncivilized, it's just time to reload. That's it. So what is the end game? What am I getting at with all this? I don't think we have an end game. I think we're struggling as a nation because we're more of a civilized, domesticated nation that has different moral and ethics than our enemy. If we're going to decide that they're our enemy, we know who they are. ISIS and all them guys over there that's trying to push Sharia law and doing everything like that. It's the way it is. Now see, here's the big problem with not having an end game. If you're going to treat the uncivilized as the uncivilized, you're going to let your uncivilized put on their uncivilized uniform and go do the uncivilized, it needs to be brutal violence and get over with. You either win or you lose. It's drawn out stuff. It's terrible. What did the Bible say to Israel when it would go into the different countries with the different tribes that were basically the same people we're fighting today in the Middle East? Because the first time I heard this, I couldn't believe what the preacher was saying. You kill every man, woman, child. That includes grandparents and infants. And the elderly and the disabled and every single living human being in that territory, Israel was commanded to kill. And that wasn't good enough for God, because God was still worried that the craziness that these people was going to bring in Israel's world was so high because of their culture that he even said to kill all the goats and the cows and the sheep and everything else. So when Israel went into these places, according to God's commandment, was to kill everything. Everything. You don't have to deal with the culture at that point. Now, am I saying that's what we should do in the Middle East? Absolutely not. There's no way in a civilized society that that'll fly. But see, that's the problem. We're trying to put civilized on top of uncivilized and have one hybrid. It's not going to work. You're not going to ever, as far as I can tell from my time over there, you're never going to be able to reason with people in the Middle East, because it is a difference of culture. How are you going to reason with a guy that the night before grabbed his 9-year-old daughter and threw her up on the kitchen table while the brothers held her legs and arms, and he ripped up her dress and cut, without anesthesia, her clit out. Because, you know, it could be a sin if she enjoyed sex too much. So we're going to flip her on the table and mutilate her body for religious purposes. Are you going to be able to reason with a person that thinks that's okay? Are you going to be able to reason with a person that thinks mercy killings are perfectly fine? What I mean by that is mercy killings is if someone does something that the dad doesn't agree with or doesn't agree with the religion, it's totally fine just to murder that person at that one point. We're dealing with the completely uncivilized. You want to know what the world was like dealing with human beings probably about 600 AD? Go to the Middle East. They stone people for fun. Like we go to a ball game, they go to stonings. They're drinking their little bitty shots of coffee, and they're smoking their cigarettes, and they're throwing rocks at some poor girl that got raped by four guys and didn't have a witness, and they're just taking their time torturing this poor girl to death with these little bitty rocks till they basically kill her. Uncivilized. Their culture is so different. So another year in the Middle East, is that going to fix it? Another 10 years? Another 20 years? Not unless you kill every single person over there that believes in Sharia law, and America is not going to do that. So what are we doing over there? Why do we listen to these charlatans on Fox News and everywhere else tell us how important it is that we stay in that war over there? Well, they attacked us first 19 years ago. You got nut jobs that thinks it's okay to cut the privates of their own daughter off with some fingernail clippers, trying to figure out a way to come over and blow somebody up. That's the way that they are. We can't comprehend that because we're more civilized and more domesticated. I'm going to switch this around. Right now, the two things that's going on politically is socialism and capitalism. You have all these socialists want this free, want that free, want everybody to pay their fair share. They want the government to start making drugs. They want governments to bail out industry. They want all this type of socialism. Then you have capitalism. Believes that through creativity and hard work and understanding of markets and a little bit of luck, that anybody can change their station in life. That's me. If this was a whole country of Clints in America, everybody believed in capitalism that strongly. And a socialist country, let's say Venezuela, comes up into America and takes America over. And they try to force all the Clints to be socialist. No matter what the law says, no matter what the government says, no matter what the punishments are, I'm never going to believe that socialism is the way to go. I'm going to fight that. And if I have children, I'm going to teach them socialism sucks, capitalism rocks. And I'm going to give them the reasons why. And hopefully they teach their kids this. Over and over we go. That is what is going on, is we're going over to a different part of the world and trying to convince these people that they need to think like us. And they're not. Just like no matter who takes over America, I'm never going to believe socialism or communism is a good thing. Ever. I'm going to figure out a way to do black market or something because I know capitalism's the way to go. I'm not going to change my mind. Nor are you going to get me to agree with you. So you're going to have a problem with Clint. Now you can try to come up with rules and laws to shove me into corners and stuff like that, but I'm always going to be trying to figure a way to fight back. That's what we're doing over there. Except it's Sharia law. It's okay to mutilate daughters. It's okay to stone people for entertainment. It's okay to beat your wife just because you're having a bad day. I can't conceive that a rational human being thinks that's logical. I can't do it. But they do. So, are we going to fix this problem of the culture without killing everybody? Nope. So, what are we doing over there? That's a bigger question. And the only reason I bring it, this is just my view of this. Because that's when I'm seeing this, I'm like, how long do these people, how long do these generals want us to stay over there? How many more young men and women are going to come back missing limbs or dead? For what? Because they're going to abuse each other over there? They've been doing that since before Christ. That started with Cain and Abel. So what are you going to do? Keep bombing them into believing into capitalism? To believe that their religion is wrong? What is the end game? Because if we don't figure out that we need to start having an end game, we're going to have a 1,000-year war or till America falls apart in the Middle East. And that's just the way that it's going to be. And I think that is a stupid way to do foreign policy. Because if you can't have, I mean, if we're, see, it made more sense in the old days when you were a soldier, and I'm talking way before my time. A country decided it was going to go into another country. The rules were very simple. If you conquered it, you kept it. You killed all the males so they couldn't fight you back. You made slaves out of the women and children, and you tried to change the way that they thought. And you took all the resources. Then you moved your people in there, and then you built settlements and everything else. That's the way the world worked all the way up till about World War I. That's the way it worked. But soldiers knew what the deal was when they went in there. Today, no one knows what the deal is. And it's just completely illogical, it's completely irrational, and it's a completely waste of manpower and resources. I mean, if we were going to go in the Middle East like we've done, that should be America's land, Americans' resources, and Americans' oil. See, we don't do that. And until we either decide that we can't deal with the uncivilized and just leave them alone to kill each other, because that's what they're going to do. That's what they've always done. Or we're going to decide we're going to kill them all, which we're never going to do. What's the point? But just think about that next time you hear one of these Republicans or these generals saying how disastrous it's going to be to leave the Middle East. It was disastrous for when we went over there. And it's going to be disastrous after we leave, because that's just what that place is. Chaos, misery, and violence. Because they're tribal to a point that we don't even comprehend. Because we don't know how to think that way anymore. And I'm glad we don't, to be honest with you. But do we really want to have a 1,000-year war in America?